the note of thanks for defending Israel. Won't you join us by sending a sweet message to the IDF?
This is Dr. Susan Blank, host of Detailing Addiction on America's Web Radio. Please join us at 4 p.m. on Tuesday afternoons.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Hi, I'm David Donaldson. I am here guest hosting for Dr. Susan Blank with Detailing Addictions. This is my first time guest hosting, but I've been on the show a few times with her, and so this is really exciting for me. To add to that excitement, my guest today is Carol Miner. She is LCSW. She is the director of the Employee Assistance Program for Gwinnett Medical Center. Prior to that, in another lifetime, she and I ran some groups together over at a place called Summit Ridge Hospital, and we worked with women who were dealing with depression and dealing with codependency issues. We're going to address the topic of codependency again today from an entirely different perspective, though, looking at drug use in the workforce, the impact of addiction on the workforce, and the impact of codependency on the workforce. Carol Miner is also the behavioral science faculty coordinator for Gwinnett Medical Center. So she's in the process of helping train young doctors to understand behavioral science. They get a lot of education about the body, but not a whole lot of education about the brain and how addiction impacts the brain. So she's making sure they get that piece of it. Carol, I'm so glad you're here. Welcome.
Glad to be here. It's my first time, too, so who knows what direction we'll go today, right?
Yeah, we'll just have to go from there and trust it'll be wonderful. So starting off, in terms of looking at substance abuse in the workplace, do you see this pretty common, and how is it impacting workplaces as you deal with them?
Well, it's very common in the workplace, much more common than most people think it is. Of course, since I do the employee assistance program for a hospital system, I'm very familiar with the impact it has on healthcare professionals. And they have a pretty high rate of abuse or dependency simply because the substances are available and stressors that occur in their lives. However, though, you know, there are other industries where drug addiction really is much more prevalent. There's like top five industries that it occurs in, like food service. You know, we think about it, you know, you've got your bartender, you've mm-hmm. got everybody that wants to go out a little bit after work, you know, just to let their hair down, relax. Construction workers, the physical labor that they have to do, a lot of times they want to toke a weed just to get a little high to get through the day. It's something we wouldn't think about around here, but it's very prevalent in the mining and drilling. So we think about our oil rigs out in the Gulf and mm-hmm. around like that, and also up in the mountains, excavation, installation, your HVAC guy, you know, a lot of different industries.
That is interesting. We've actually treated a few people who were on the oil rigs, and theirs would be a real binge pattern of abuse because they absolutely could not touch any substances while they were out there. But as soon as they came to shore, they'd be out for 6 weeks and come back in, and that would be all they would do. Their massive paycheck that they would get would end up entirely going to drugs or alcohol.
Yeah.
So in your capacity, you really deal with it in the healthcare industry.
That's correct. Yeah, mostly healthcare, nurses, doctors, PAs, anesthetists. Those are physicians too. Pharmacists.
Okay. You find that to be up there with the top five industries because of the prevalence of the ease of access?
Well, you know, the statistics don't put it up there at the top, but I guess because I'm so close to it, I think it's a lot more prevalent than lay people think that it is. I mean, you think about it, it's very stressful jobs. I mean, physicians and dentists are in the top categories for suicide and things like that. So you put substance abuse along with stressors going on in your life, and mm-hmm. it's a Molotov cocktail.
Just waiting to happen.
Yeah,
absolutely. So what are some of the signs that will get people, referred to you as an EAP there to kind of help direct them? What brings them to your attention?
Well, oftentimes they've had impaired behavior at work. So the policy would be that they would have a drug screen. So they go down and they have a drug screen, and something shows up. So then in those situations, they have to come see me. But a lot of people don't have to come see me that have addiction problems, that just are able to slide under the radar and get by with it. But, you know, one of the things you might look for is if it's a Monday through Friday person, and they seem to be absent on Fridays and Mondays quite a bit.
So they look like they're developing a weekend party habit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or, you know, the high performer who does really good during the daytime at work, there's no issues at work, but they go home and they drink until they pass out, so the only problem really that shows up at work is they're late to work.
Okay.
And a lot of times we're willing to excuse that because of Atlanta traffic, being here in Atlanta, that's a plausible excuse.
Mm-hmm.
But when you start seeing people being tardy and late multiple times instead of on rare occasions, and they're tardy when there's not a traffic tie-up on 285, then you've got an indicator that something's going on.
Well, and certainly in most of these professional jobs, there's an expectation that they're going to account for the traffic most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So when it's beginning to become a pattern.
Yeah, that's when you look for it.
So the high performers, where they're doing most of their drinking or their substance abuse after hours, will you get calls from family members? Will you likely get indicators from the household?
I'll get calls from the family members sometimes, but that's where the codependency comes in. You know, because for a lot of professionals, they're the breadwinner of the family.
Okay, okay.
And there may be a spouse that's not employed, so they're not going to call and report their spouse because that's going to impact their income.
That's really quite a bind that a lot of codependent people find themselves in.
Yeah.
The question they'll ask is, what else was I supposed to do?
Mm-hmm. You know, we've got kids. Mm-hmm. You know, am I supposed to lose my house and lose my income? You know, it's really frightening to think of a decrease in your standard of living. If you think about leaving someone or having that person out of work, I would hope a lot of times that people have planned financially for emergencies so that if they did need to go into treatment, everything's covered. But a lot of times spouses are afraid of that. I've had physicians' wives tell me that maybe the physician's wife is the impaired person, not necessarily the physician, and the physician will call me and ask me if I will see them. And one of the things that would be important, and a lot of times, because females seem to be secretive drinkers,
okay,
they tend to drink alone and in private, and we start talking about going into treatment or doing something like that, or going to an AA meeting, as simple as starting just with an AA meeting. A lot of times they're afraid to go because what will the community, how will that affect my husband's reputation in the community? So I would spend time talking with them saying, well, you know, actually your husband may gain more respect because you're not keeping it a secret. You're not keeping it the elephant in the living
room.
And
so people can understand.
Yeah, and they feel like the physician, I would think they would feel like then their physician would have a better understanding of what their life might be like and not living up here in this ivory tower like a lot of people have the opinion that it makes them more real.
Right, right. In your capacity, do you also see people coming from other industries, to like family members have that are needing, that are like an employee at Gwinnett Medical who may have a spouse that's dealing with addiction? Are they able to utilize your services to get some help or support?
Sure. Employee assistance programs were initially started to address drugs in the workplace. The government and private industry came together and developed this concept.
Okay.
So that companies could provide a resource for their employees that did struggle with addiction and their family members. So employee assistance programs are not just for the employees, they're for the family members. That includes spouses and children. So, and we get to do the assessment and then make the referral for appropriate treatment resources.
And not actually providing the treatment, but making sure that they get where they need to go.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's correct.
Sometimes that's kind of a confusion about, if I reach out to this person, is it going to be safe? Is it going to be confidential? If I open this can of worms, where is it going to go?
It's very, that's a false belief that a lot of people have, or a concern that people have. The words didn't necessarily come out the way I wanted them to just then. But in all reality, EAPs are totally confidential. Now, some companies have them in-house where they're actually employees of the company.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that keeps people from using them because they feel like their records are a part of company records and they're going to go in their personnel file. It couldn't be further from the truth. That
so
does not happen.
You're able to assure them that the things that are talking to you about won't go to their embossed, won't go to the higher-ups at Gwinnett Medical Center, that their job is safe if they're coming to you.
Well, yeah, and what we have at Gwinnett Medical is kind of a hybrid EAP program. So it's actually a contracted service through my private practice. I'm not a hospital employee.
Okay, okay.
So I make sure to explain that to folks when they come in. So any records I have are not hospital records. They don't go anywhere. But even if you use a general EAP, the records are very confidential. If it's even a part of your company like Home Depot or trying to think of other companies, well, they contract theirs out too to a national organ. A lot of your major corporations contract their EAP out to companies that specialize in EAP. So again, you're not going to a company employee when you go to the employee assistance program.
So they're able to have assurance that what they're coming to you and it's going to be safe and respected and they're going to be able to get directed to the services they need.
Yeah. Now, if it's a mandatory referral where they've shown up at work impaired, it's impacted because sometimes you see low production, a decrease in productivity or quality of work. And if the addiction has been found by a drug screen at work and they're referred to the employee assistance program and we make the recommendation for treatment, we'll explain to the employee that we will talk with their company about our recommendations.
Okay.
If they follow through with their treatment, if they accept the treatment and follow through, and then we facilitate a return-to-work meeting and an agreement when they return to work to make sure there's a smooth transition back to the work when they go back.
So you're going to work with them all the way through the process?
We're going to work with them all the way through the process.
If someone comes to you because they're having, say, issues with other people they work with, they're getting referred because they're always agitated or they're always annoying the people they work with, and your gut thinks that there's addiction going on in this picture, what's your process to kind of tease that out or to address it when it didn't come from a drug screen and you're just seeing some behaviors?
Well, one of the first things I do is I'll just take a good family history. I'll start out with a general family history, a genogram kind of thing.
Okay.
And look for family patterns. And one of the questions I'll ask is there a family history of addiction? And a lot of times they'll tell me no. I'll say, well, nobody smoked cigarettes. Nobody was obese and ate a whole lot. Nobody went shopping. Anybody drink a little more than usual? Because a lot of folks in the generation, you know, in the 50s and early 60s, it was two or three martini lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And in the evening you came home and you had cocktails with people in the neighborhood. So a person could have a drinking problem and it not even be recognized. So when I'm getting the family history, they may not feel like it. But then I have to ask, with that going on then, well, do you ever have a drink? Do you ever have a drink to relax when you go home?
Okay. So they obviously would say, yeah, well, every now and then I'll have one with my neighbors.
And then I'll come in and I'll say, every now and then you'll have one with your neighbors. Well, they won't necessarily say one. They'll say a couple.
A couple.
And I'll just kind of laugh and I'll say, at that point, I'll just laugh and I'll say, well, you know, I've been doing this for a long time. I know a couple for me is two, but I know a couple for you might be four to six. So that means a couple.
And you get that number from them. We are going to need to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about how we tease this out, and then we'll look at other issues with addiction in the workplace.
The disease of addiction is a life-altering challenge, not just for the person suffering its effects, but also for the family and friends who support and love the one caught in its grasp. What should be the course of treatment? Who is the best person to render treatment? And what is the best place to go for the care that is needed? We know that you want answers to these and many more questions. Call 770-696-9862 and speak to a representative of the Atlanta Healing Center. They can tailor a program specifically designed to address the needs of the person suffering with an addiction or give you guidance as to where that help may be found. Information is the key, and the trained staff at EHC is here to assist. If you wish, you can also get more information on the website located at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on americaswebradio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on americaswebradio.com anytime you like.
Perhaps you are struggling to cope with the disease of addiction. If not, you probably know a family member or friend that needs help in battling the cravings and the personal and professional damage done by the effects of drugs or alcohol. Get a pen and paper and be ready to write down the following. These are the issues that the trained staff at the Atlanta Healing Center address and treat every day. Their doctors and counselors with over 40 years of practice in the field of addiction can treat the suffering individual in a thoughtful, compassionate, and experienced manner and guide him or her along the path to recovery. So call 770-696-9862 and speak to a knowledgeable staff member about how you or your loved one can be helped to enjoy a better and healthier life. More information is also available on the website at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is americaswebradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Hi, welcome to Detailing Addictions. This is David Donaldson stepping in for Dr. Susan Blank today, and I'm here with Carol Miner, EAP for the Gwinnett Hospital System. And we were just talking about the assessment process and beginning to really look at, is addiction impacting a particular employee? Are there other things that you notice when somebody is referred to you for issues other than addiction that lead you to think this is the real thing that's going on?
Well, it could be if they're in a production industry, maybe they're starting to have more accidents at work.
Okay.
Not paying as close of attention.
So becoming preoccupied with something else.
Uh-huh. Yeah. They're not making good decisions. You know, they've been somebody that's been really sharp and can do this, and all of a sudden they're not thinking as clearly as they used to think. They don't have it together like that. You asked a little earlier, they may have difficulty relating to other employees because they're grumpy.
They're grumpy. Yeah.
They're grumpy. And the other thing you'll see when you see the decrease in production, I mean, we see that in healthcare professionals too. And in healthcare, we have a lot of codependency. We kind of mentioned that we would talk on that too. One of the things that I notice is I'll have a person having difficulty getting along with coworkers. Well, part of the reason they're having the difficulty getting along with coworkers is being a social worker. I can say this because I'm a healthcare professional. We're real good at taking care of other people.
Codependents are practically bred for this field.
Exactly. So you've got somebody with an addiction problem that's coming in hungover in the morning, so the coworker, since we're such good caretakers, we'll cover for them for a little while, you know, till they get their coffee and they can get their head on straight.
To be helpful and to be caring and not to make waves.
Uh-huh. But what ends up happening is then the person abusing the substance or with a problem begins to expect the good codependent to take up the slack for them. But the good codependent at some point gets frustrated and irritated because they're not doing their work. So then they start complaining to the manager that this other person's not doing their work.
Okay.
Then the person who's not doing their work complains to the manager because it's just a personality conflict. They're just expecting too much. So then we get in this vicious cycle.
So the manager in that scenario becomes part of this triangle, where codependency on one end and addiction on the other, just like in a household setting.
Uh-huh. And I'll get the phone call. I've got these two associates who aren't getting along. Can you come do a mediation for me?
Really? So you're going in there on the unit or with them and mediating between the two of them.
Uh-huh.
Do you pretty quickly begin picking up the signs that there's something else going on at that point?
it becomes pretty obvious when they start talking about what's going on, and I try to break them off into individual sessions then.
Okay.
And I may even do – well, actually, what I would do – let me back up a minute – is do an individual session with each one of them first, have their manager send them over to talk to me by themselves so that I can try to tease some of it out. And if I don't tease anything like that out at that point, then I'll go in and I'll do the mediation, and as we talk, some of the tempers will begin to flare, and then I'll find out, well, they smell like alcohol when they come in the morning. A lot of people try to cover up alcohol with breath mints
mouthwash. Yeah.
But mouthwash has alcohol in it.
Mm-hmm.
But they think they're doing a good job of covering it up.
Well, and the thing that I always notice is that the smell of alcohol coming through your pores is very different than the smell of alcohol on your breath.
Yeah, but teaching people, your normal layperson doesn't realize that.
Yeah, that's true.
Actually had somebody tell me this week that they were concerned about confronting an associate because, you know, in the medical profession, when you go in a hospital room or a patient room, even in a clinic, you soap in and you soap out when you leave.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an alcohol content in the soaping in and soaping out. So I have had people say to me they're not sure if they're not just smelling the soaping in and soaping out, so they're hesitant to
say anything
because they don't want to say something and be wrong.
I'm finding myself thinking about the codependent, because this when I first thought about talking to you, it was the codependency that really was striking my interest. And working just with families in a family setting, real often helping the codependent see how sometimes they set up the behavior. Do you find that there are times where the real problem is codependency coming in and somebody is suddenly taking on other people's jobs and as a favor, and then suddenly they're feeling overwhelmed and they're kind of stuck with a lot of tasks that weren't necessarily on their job description?
Yeah, definitely. So then I have to work with the codependent on establishing boundaries for themselves.
Okay.
And setting limits.
How receptive do you find that they are to owning that behavior?
Oh, I get a lot of yes, but. That's a good idea, but.
But. And what do you find tends to be behind the but for those, the codependency in the workplace?
Well, a lot of times the yes, but is they're scared to let the other person experience the consequences of not doing their job.
They're afraid if that person gets fired, it'll be their fault.
Uh-huh. They're afraid that they see themselves as doing it to the other person instead of seeing that they're just stepping back, just doing their job, and letting that person experience a consequence for their own actions and choices. I see it a lot with parents, especially, mm-hmm. not just in the workplace,
mm-hmm.
but with parents, too. You've got that son or daughter that's got an addiction. And we'll be talking about, and I'll say to them, well, you know, it looks to me like you may have to tell them they've either got to stop or they're going to have to find somewhere else to live. That's when I really get in trouble with people. What do you mean? I can't put them out on the street. They won't have anywhere to go. And unfortunately, sometimes that has to happen for people to change. And as a parent myself, that would be so hard to do.
Yeah, it's incredibly scary, the idea of I'm going to actually put them out and lock the door behind them.
But that's sometimes what it takes. Yeah. Are not bonding them out when mm-hmm. they get a DUI. Let them sit there for 24 or 48 hours.
I actually find if they pick up the phone and call before they bond them out, that we can help them realize that's a fairly safe place for them to sit and think and learn,
mm-hmm.
Safer than they are when they're at home and mm-hmm. sneaking out the back door. So that dynamic that happens at home is very similar to what you see in the workplace?
Yeah, and think about it. If you grow up and people are always making excuses for you, bailing you out of trouble, making sure nothing bad ever happens to you, they grow up, they graduate from college. Some don't, but most do. They graduate from college and they go to work. And they're amazed that their boss doesn't do their work for them.
So it's the addict in that sense has moved on through the system and gotten into a job and then shocked to find out they have to do some work.
Uh-huh. Or that nobody's going to pick up the pieces for them when they don't complete a task.
Do you find, just as in a household where an addict is really good at finding the codependent who's going to do that for them, do you mm-hmm. find in a workplace setting they're pretty good at pulling someone into
it? Oh, yeah, they've got radar for it.
Radar.
They've got a good radar. And that's where I'll have the codependent come into my office and say, what, do I have a sign across my forehead? And I'll say, yeah, it says codependent. And they'll just kind of look at me.
Baffled.
They're baffled.
What is the definition of codependency that you use when you're helping them to understand that?
I try to make it very, very simple.
Okay.
And I just tell them, when you've lost your identity and can't figure out who you are anymore because you're so busy taking care of who they are, then you're pretty much sure you're a codependent.
Perfect. Perfect. That speaks right to the core of what it is, that they've lost their identity and, mm-hmm. and their total self is based on how the other person's doing.
Exactly. And I have a particular book that I recommend that people will read. And a few years ago, I actually had one of my patients come back the next time, and she said, you know, I started reading that book, and I cussed you out and threw the book across the room.
I've had that experience. Are there... I have just lost my train of thought. So
that's okay. And you're not as old as I am, and I do it all the time.
Do you find in the hospital setting or in the work setting that there are particular fields that are more likely to be the codependent or positions?
I think it's across the board. I really do. That's a good question. I don't have a particular answer. I'm sure there's statistics on that somewhere.
There's definitely stereotypes that the nurse kind of bred to be the codependent
uh-huh.
for the doctor and
teachers
and secretaries.
But think about it. You know, a lot of physicians that don't go home at night because they're so busy taking care of patients, and that's part of what I do as a behavioral science faculty with new residents, is with ACGME new standards. I know we're getting a little off from addiction, but we want them to know how to balance their life, the work-life balance, and that's what you find with addicts.
Right, right.
They don't have that work-life balance.
I actually think that fits really closely, because part of the catalyst for a lot of them moving into addiction is they don't have the balance and they medicate that stress when they get home. So helping them to recognize they have to say no and they have to leave.
And to recognize, you know, a lot of times some of the contributors to the addictions are a lot of stress in your life. You know, for a lot of people, if they had one stressor, they could probably handle it. But let's say they go through a windstorm of stressors and they have four or five, and they're looking at the whole spectrum. So they become overwhelmed. So it's easier to have a couple of drinks and relax and forget about it. But what they don't realize is that spectrum is there when they wake up in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
But before they know it, one drink doesn't do it. They need two drinks. Well, the doctor gave me a Xanax. How about I have a Xanax and a glass of wine tonight? And there we go. We've got it going. So normally I could handle it, but with all of this, I can't. Or they're not happy with their job.
So you gave some initials earlier, just a few minutes ago, about who's got these new standards. What were those again?
It's called ACGME. It's the accrediting board for residency programs for physicians.
Okay. And we are at that point of taking another break. When we return, we will dig into more of the codependency and addiction in the workplace. Thank you.
Perhaps you are struggling to cope with the disease of addiction. If not, you probably know a family member or friend that needs help in battling the cravings and the personal and professional damage done by the effects of drugs or alcohol. Get a pen and paper and be ready to write down the following. These are the issues that the trained staff at the Atlanta Healing Center address and treat every day. Their doctors and counselors with over 40 years of practice in the field of addiction can treat the suffering individual in a thoughtful, compassionate, and experienced manner and guide him or her along the path to recovery. So call 770-696-9862 and speak to a knowledgeable staff member about how you or your loved one can be helped to enjoy a better and healthier life. More information is also available on the website at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is Tracy Pearson with Prissy Tomboy. Listen to the Prissy Tomboy radio show every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time as I interview special guests that will inspire adventure and fitness for females.
This is Dr. George. Join me Wednesday mornings for Medicine on Call and participate in a lively conversation. Learn what's happening behind the headlines in medicine. Understand Obamacare. And learn how to protect yourself and navigate the system.
The disease of addiction is a life-altering challenge, not just for the person suffering its effects, but also for the family and friends who support and love the one caught in its grasp. What should be the course of treatment? Who is the best person to render treatment? And what is the best place to go for the care that is needed? We know that you want answers to these and many more questions. Call 770-696-9862 and speak to a representative of the Atlanta Healing Center. They can tailor a program specifically designed to address the needs of the person suffering with an addiction or give you guidance as to where that help may be found. Information is the key, and the trained staff at AHC is here to assist. If you wish, you can also get more information on the website located at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is americaswebradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Hi, welcome to Detailing Addictions. My name is David Donaldson. I am filling in for Dr. Susan Blank today. Our guest this week is Carol Miner. She's an LCSW, and she's the director of the EAP program for Gwinnett Hospital System. And also the other aspect of her job is the behavioral science faculty coordinator for Gwinnett Medical Center, where she helps the young doctors remember that the brain and the social sciences are important as well. We were just kind of looking at that aspect in terms of helping them know how to take care of themselves with boundaries, with stress, with saying no to taking another patient and those kind of things. Was there any other thoughts that came to mind related to that?
Well, I think one of the things, and this applies not just in the medical field to others, but long hours. You know, people will get trapped into using a substance so they can keep up the pace, you know, keep up the pace. That's food service. But think of physicians, the hours they have to keep sometimes.
Well, and physicians as well as food service. When you first mentioned food service before, the thought that hit my mind is that a lot of food service people work at the off hours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're working when everybody else is chilling out and relaxing, and so they get off work later, and the only thing that's available to do is alcohol or drug type activities, and physicians will get off at those kind of off hours as well.
Exactly, and that's the great thing about for new residents and doctors, they're really focusing on them getting the amount of sleep, so there really is a focus on duty hours now, so they can only work so many hours. Because the medical industry has recognized that this old you work from 8 in the morning till midnight does not work.
That is a huge shift, at least you would think, based on popular television. You always think that doctors are working, especially during the residency, that this is this period of time where they are just told you're not going to sleep for the next year, and you work, work, work.
And if you talk to older physicians, that is how it was for them.
So that was the reality.
That has been the reality, but they're trying to put it into place where they have to rest. They can only work so many hours, and then they have to rest so many hours before they can work. Really getting a focus on work-life balance and having you do more than just work.
I know in the trucking industry, in the cross-country roads, they've mm-hmm. recognized that sleep deprivation is just as dangerous as DUI and mm-hmm. has as high a percentage of accidents.
Mm-hmm.
I'm imagining that in the medical world, these are similar.
Same. Think about the nurse that works the 7P to 7A shift.
They used to refer to that as the Baylor shift, and
uh-huh.
it was kind of an ideal thing because then mm-hmm. they didn't have to work as many hours to get more pay. They found it was not healthy?
It's not healthy long term. There's studies that show that there's a high prevalence of depression in shift workers that work overnight because they don't get the amount of sleep. It affects your circadian rhythms.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get the amount of sleep that you need. That's why depression is more prevalent in the more northern parts of the country where you don't see as much daylight, and around Florida and down you go further south, there's more sunshine,
mm-hmm.
and there's less depression. And that's, you know, where we prescribe those lights in the wintertime so that people get more light, because that's been proven to help with depression. And a lot of times people who are abusing substances are using the substance to treat a depression. So there's a comorbidity
with depression. I imagine also you might see people who are abusing amphetamines to deal with that, to get themselves up,
sure.
to keep themselves going.
Sure, yeah.
Are there other contributing factors that you've recognized in your work with professionals and with employees that lead to workplace addictions?
Well, just the fatigue, repetitious duties, boredom.
Boredom. Where they're even
you're imagine. Working the dish line, and all you're doing is washing dishes. You know, you're the dishwasher. You know, you're in an assembly plant. Think about when we had the big GM plant here.
Right, right. And the whole day, all you are doing is putting this one bolt in this one slot.
Mm-hmm. So boredom, trying to not fall asleep because you're so bored.
You can even hear my own brain justifying, well, if I had to do that for my entire day, I would certainly want to have something
mm-hmm.
afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But also the risk of accidents in that sort of job setting are pretty high.
Exactly. Exactly. So companies like that have good drug-free workplace programs or programs, especially if you're dealing with the DOT. You've got to do the random drug screens and things like that. What we find, though, sometimes is that people who may have had positive drug screens at larger corporations or something like that, they'll go to smaller businesses because smaller businesses usually don't have an alcohol and drug policy in place. They don't do random drug screens because it can be quite expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So they feel like they're pretty safe there because they're not
likely to be tested.
Not likely to be tested, so they can continue with their substance and still work. Because remember, a lot of people who abuse substances are high performers or perform well on the job. It's when they leave work.
One of the last pieces of denial that you'll hear, particularly from males, is that my use never impacted my job. And so you can see how this would keep their denial going. Even though they're going down the progression, they're moving from a higher pressure, high performance job to a smaller company and hiding a little bit and keeping that denial going.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and I think I don't know this for a fact, but from what I've seen through the years, I think sometimes what happens with your upper level, maybe some of your C-level people mm-hmm. in addiction, is they have very good administrative assistants who are very good codependents. So they take care and take up the slack when they do begin.
You see that also with professional athletes, with their managers and with their publicity people, that
mm-hmm.
they are taking up the slack or they are keeping the image safe.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess in that sense, just like with the spouse who's not working and dependent on the income, there's a real sense of if I don't do this, the consequence will be too great.
Exactly. I mean, you don't want to lose that big contract.
Right, right. And in particular, if the person dealing with the addiction is the main man, the boss, or mm-hmm. the woman that's in charge of everything, how do you speak up without the fear of you're going to lose your job, or how do you have the conversation at all?
Well, that is a very difficult one, and it is something that I run into from time to time with folks. Now, in larger companies, usually you've got a chain of command, and there's somebody outside of your boss that you could go to and speak with about the problem. In smaller companies, though, sometimes you don't have anybody you can go and talk to, and you have to decide, am I going to address this? What are the consequences for me if I do address it? And am I ready to handle whatever the consequences may be?
I guess also stopping and looking at what are the consequences if I don't address this, and,
exactly.
and what's the potential liability that could come.
Yeah. And what you have to realize, sometimes in smaller companies, you can address it. You can talk to your blue in the face.
And it won't matter.
And it won't matter. And that's where you really have to look out for yourself and say, is this worth it for me? Sometimes you have to make really tough choices.
And so sometimes that tough choice is it's time to start looking for another job.
Get my resume together.
Yeah, yeah. Reading the writing on the wall there.
Uh-huh.
In a situation that somebody is decided, okay, I do want to have this conversation, I don't want to just throw my job away, are there guidelines that you use with people to help prepare people for this type of conversation?
Well, the first thing I do is talk with them about, okay, you're ready to have the conversation. You're not ready to have the conversation until you're prepared for whatever the consequences may be. We're hoping for a positive outcome, but you've got to be prepared for if it's a negative outcome. Okay?
So the negative that they could lose their job, or the person they care about could lose their job, or...
Or there could be... sometimes there are subtle forms of retaliation. For example,
okay,
you put in for vacation and you don't get your vacation, or you're making a trip to Europe and you need to buy your plane ticket 6 months in advance and you don't get the approval for your vacation until 30 days before time to go because they need to make sure they're staffing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now those are just some things that you look at. Those are subtle things. Not anything overt. You can't call it. It's not discrimination or anything. It's just how it is. The other thing, though, that I work with folks on, if you want to have the conversation with that person, one of the things you do is you start out by talking about changes in job performance. You don't start out with saying, I think you have an addiction. You start out with saying, I've noticed that you're having trouble getting here on time in the morning. And that's impacting your coworkers. Okay?
Okay.
If it's your boss, maybe your boss has been missing some meetings and things. You know, you may want to go in and talk to him and say, I don't know if you're aware, but through the grapevine,
so
this is what's out there on the table, and I just want to let you know, and I'm concerned about you.
I'm noticing that you're immediately helping them start out with I statements.
Exactly.
Is there a reason that in particular in this situation you want to be clear to stick with your I statements?
People can hear I statements better than they can hear you statements. Okay. If you start out telling somebody you're doing this, you, that's like pointing a gun at them. And if somebody, that's like attacking them.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're being attacked, what's the first thing you're
going
to do?
Absolutely going on defense.
You're going to go on defense. So you're not going to listen. You're going to be preparing your response.
Right, right.
So you're not going to be able to hear. If you use I statements, then they're more willing to hear it. Now, their level of denial may still be so strong they don't hear what you're saying, but you're going to have a better chance of them hearing what you're trying to say.
There is a sense that the I statement kind of invites mm-hmm. somebody to start listening.
Mm-hmm.
So they've decided, okay, I want to have this conversation, and y'all have kind of talked through the consequences that might happen. Starting out talking about performance, talking about attendance, and this segment is going so fast, we're going to come back in just a minute to look at how else to continue this conversation so that hopefully it will be as healthy as possible for all involved.
The disease of addiction is a life-altering challenge, not just for the person suffering its effects, but also for the family and friends who support and love the one caught in its grasp. What should be the course of treatment? Who is the best person to render treatment? And what is the best place to go for the care that is needed? We know that you want answers to these and many more questions. Call 770-696-9862 and speak to a representative of the Atlanta Healing Center. They can tailor a program specifically designed to address the needs of the person suffering with an addiction or give you guidance as to where that help may be found. Information is the key, and the trained staff at AHC is here to assist. If you wish, you can also get more information on the website located at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Perhaps you are struggling to cope with the disease of addiction. If not, you probably know a family member or friend that needs help in battling the cravings and the personal and professional damage done by the effects of drugs or alcohol. Get a pen and paper and be ready to write down the following. These are the issues that the trained staff at the Atlanta Healing Center address and treat every day. Their doctors and counselors with over 40 years of practice in the field of addiction can treat the suffering individual in a thoughtful, compassionate, and experienced manner and guide him or her along the path to recovery. So call 770-696-9862 and speak to a knowledgeable staff member about how you or your loved one can be helped to enjoy a better and healthier life. More information is also available on the website at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Hi, I'm David Donaldson with Detailing Addictions, filling in for Dr. Susan Blank. I'm here today with Carol Miner, LCSW and Director of Employee Assistance Program at Gwinnett Medical Center. We were just talking about how to have that conversation if you're dealing with workplace addiction and if you're trying to take some steps. And part of what we were talking about is helping the person be prepared for possible consequences. We discussed over the break how there are some provisions in place to, or that can be in place to help protect small businesses.
A small business, if you're a small business owner or affiliated with a small business, it's very important to have a drug and alcohol policy. So that you have a written policy in place that applies to everyone so that you can address the issue where somebody might feel like that you're singling them out.
Okay.
For others. So you want to have a policy in place that clearly states what you're going to do and what's going to happen if there is suspected drug use.
Are there particular guidelines that you're aware of for small businesses in creating those kind of policies?
You can go and Google workplace, drugs in the workplace, okay, or drug-free workplace, because there has been a program for the drug-free workplace where you can go, and there are companies that consult on this type of thing. So there are resources for that.
I am aware that in Gwinnett County, once upon a time, there was drug-free workplaces that actually would send people out to companies and help them meet the criteria mm-hmm. and set up the things. Mm-hmm. I don't know for sure if they still exist, but it would definitely be something worth looking into.
Because you want to have that policy where you clearly define what substance abuse is.
Mm-hmm.
You want to have a definition of it. Who's covered in your policy, who is covered by it, and it should cover all employees. This should not be something that the C-suite's not involved in. It should apply to everybody in the company. It needs to talk about the right to confidentiality and what the process is. You need to, if you're doing drug screens, you need to have a contract with a place to send the person to do the drug testing. Now, in healthcare systems, if we have suspected a for-cause drug screen, our policy, and this would be a policy to really think about having, is that you'll walk the person to the lab on the facility if you've got that there.
Okay.
And there's a drug screen done there.
What is it when you use the phrase for-cause drug screen?
That's if somebody has shown up at work and appears to be impaired.
Okay. If somebody has a error or an accident or something, is that also part of it?
Usually in production industry, that's a part of the policy, that you're going to have a drug screen.
Okay, okay.
Because you can't take the risk of injuring other employees.
I know that's part of it with the DOT in terms of truck drivers.
Oh, yeah, your SAP training.
SAP training. If you have an accident and you're dirty, things are going to really be changing for you.
Yeah, and that's for airplane pilots, too. Oil riggers.
Mm-hmm.
Cruise ships, anybody that can fall into that category has those same guidelines within the United States.
I didn't realize oil riggers were part of that group. That makes sense because it is a definite safety issue. So if they're having that conversation and they're well rehearsed now and using I statements, then
they've
what
had
do
their
you,
training in how to address. So okay, you're on the job. You've had your training. The policy's in place. You've had your training on how to identify substance abuse.
Okay.
First thing you're going to do is you're going to gather your resources and know what's available for the person. Okay. Now, usually as a part of your policy, you want to have a contract with an employee assistance person so that your policy states if there's a positive drug screen, you're going to refer them to the employee assistance program for further assessment. So the one thing they're going to need to do is have further assessment.
Okay.
But oftentimes you've got problem employees that may not have substance abuse, and you think it's substance abuse, but it's not. So first off, what you're going to do is be just observing their behavior, their work performance.
So you're really not going into, I think you're an alcoholic.
No,
or
you're
I
not.
Think you're a drug addict.
No, you're not going to do that. You're going to have documented behavior problems.
Okay.
So that's where your documentation is very important. You know, we hear of it in terms you got to document for a possible EEOC complaints and things, workman's, but you need to document because of things like this also. Okay, so the record, because most people with substance abuse problems are very good at covering them up. Okay. I can think of an incident when I very first started doing EAP work with a hospital system, and we had a nurse who had tested positive for Adderall.
Okay.
Okay. So she pull her into HR, and I'm there for this meeting to pull her in to talk to her about that. Well, she's taking the Adderall because she works night shift. Her son has ADHD, so there is a prescription because she would never go out on the street and buy the drug. By the way, you know, that's one of our most prevalent forms of addiction now is prescription drug addiction.
Yeah.
And I'm sure y'all have talked about that a lot.
We deal with that quite regularly. Yeah. And that scenario in particular where a mom, a very, you know, sweet, nice, well-mannered mom doesn't think twice of just taking some of her child's ADD meds.
Exactly. So that's what had happened with this nurse. So, you know, I just simply looked at her and I said, well, she had made the comment that she carried the Adderall in her purse. And I just simply looked at her and I said, that's confusing. Why are you carrying your son's Adderall in your purse instead of sending it with him to school?
Mm-hmm.
Where it needs to be. And she just gave me a reason and left. But a couple of days later, we referred her for treatment because she did not have a prescription for Adderall. So we addressed it, but she actually came back and thanked the human resources person for us asking that question because she said she would have never acknowledged it if she had not been asked the question.
So that's often the secret. That's often the secret. The addicts are just waiting for the question to be asked in a way that they can actually answer it.
Uh-huh. Because on the bottom line, they all know they need help.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to ask the right question in the right way to get the right answer.
Yeah.
So that would be what I would say. And if you do, you got to take action, though.
So for small businesses to find an employee assistance person, I know your contract with Gwinnett Medical. Do you take other businesses, or do you have other EAP services that you recommend them to? I know you're not wanting to necessarily build up your own practice anymore, but...
I have made a decision to stick with one company.
Okay.
Okay.
And
but if somebody were to call me, I would give them the names of other companies that I know in the area that could meet their need. That's the social worker.
I was about to say, as a good social worker could.
Yeah. So I am always welcome phone calls if you need resources to try to help you tap in wherever you could tap in. There are some very good companies in the area that provide very good services and can give you what you need.
Perfect. Perfect. It's such a vital service that that companies need, that employees need, and it's not one that you hear about as much anymore for some reason.
And people don't use it as much as it could be used because it's not set up to be punitive. An employee assistance program is there to provide resources to people who need them. And most people think you've got to be, you know, on the bed, not able to get up. But the employee assistance program is there for you at the beginning when you're starting to have problems, where we can get you in touch with the resources you need so that, you know, maybe if you've got addiction in your family and you're beginning to drink too much, maybe really all you need to do is go to some AA meetings and you don't have to go to rehab. Let's do it at the beginning.
Before it becomes a huge issue.
Before it becomes a huge issue and you've had to lose jobs, family.
Do you help then with the process? We're kind of getting close on the hour, but do you help with the process then of them returning after treatment or after?
Sure. We have a policy. We return people to work all the time. Our Gwinnett Health System returns people to work all the time. If they've been in rehab and rehab is the result of a positive drug screen.
Mm-hmm.
We will sit down before they return to work, and we will do what we call a return to work meeting,
okay,
which involves the manager, the employee assistance person, and the employee. We'll talk about what their requirements are for them to return to work. They'll be on a return to work agreement for 2 years most times.
Okay.
If it's a nurse or a physician, we're going to expect them to do the caduceus group or the impaired nurses group. We're going to expect them to do all the things their boards tell them to do. We're just an additional support piece to come in to manage the transition back to work.
Nice.
You know, beyond that, and unfortunately, I've worked with some really good nurses that needed to be on return to work agreements. They needed the restrictions that the board puts on them mm-hmm. to be able to stay sober, because I've worked with a couple where within a month after they got off the restrictions, they had already used again. So we want to keep that from happening. Hopefully with the EAP being involved and falling through, maybe we can help with keeping a relapse or a serious relapse.
And what's so important for people to hear is that addiction doesn't mean that you have to lose your career and you have to lose everything, and that there are systems in place to help people not only get healthy again, but also rebuild their lives. And EAP has proven to be a vital one of those positions for Gwinnett Medical and other places. Thank you for listening today. I am David Donaldson, once again, for filling in for Dr. Susan Blank with Detailing Addictions. Have a great week.
This is America's Webradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.